Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Lord Vishavdev's teachings, text 30. So let's repeat what's on the board. Okay, now the translation. Vishavdev began to tour through cities, villages, mines, countrysides, valleys, gardens, military camps, cow pens, the homes of cowherd men, transient hotels, hills, forests, and hermitages. Any remember any of the places he used to visit? What's that?
Military camps.
That one you picked up on. Okay. I'll read it again slower. Rishabhdev began to tour through cities, villages, mines, countrysides, valleys, gardens, military camps, cow pens, the homes of the cowherd men, transient hotels, hills, forests, and hermitages. Wherever he traveled, all bad elements surrounded him. Just as flies surround the body of an elephant coming from a forest. He was always being threatened, beaten, urinated upon, and spat upon. Sometimes people threw stones, stool, and dust at him. And sometimes people passed foul air before him. Thus people called him many bad names and gave him a great deal of trouble. But he did not care about this, for he understood that the body is simply meant for such an end. He was situated on the spiritual platform, and being in his spiritual glory, he did not care for all these material insults. In other words, he completely understood that matter and spirit is separate, and he had no bodily conception. Thus, without being angry at anyone, he walked through the whole world alone. Purport. Narottam Das Thakura says, Dehe deha smriti nahi yara samsara bandana kahan tara. When a person fully realizes that the material world, that the material body and world are temporary, he's not concerned with pain and pleasures of the body. As Sri Krishna advises in the Bhagavad Gita 2.14, Matra sparsha sukonteya shitoshna sukadukada agama paino nityas tam titiksha svavarata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress, and the disappearance in due course, are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O sign of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. As far as Rishabhdev is concerned, it has already been explained, Idam shariram mama durabhavyam. Duravibhavyam. He did not at all possess a material body, and therefore he was tolerant of all the trouble offered to him by the bad elements in society. Consequently, he could tolerate people throwing stool and dust upon him and beating him. His body was transcendental and consequently did not at all suffer pain. He was always situated in his spiritual bliss, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 1861, Ishvara sarabhutanam ride sharjuna tishtati brahmayan sarabhutani yantra rudani maya. Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. Since the Lord is situated in everyone's heart, he is in the heart of hogs and dogs also. If the hogs and dogs in the material bodies live in filthy places, one should not think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his Paramatma future also lives in a filthy place. Although Lord Rishabhdev was maltreated by the bad elements of the world, he was not at all affected. Therefore, it is stated here, Mahima Avastanena, he was situated in his own glory. He was never saddened due to being insulted in the many ways described above. among Vishnu Praya Krishna Prasthaya Putra Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamita Namane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shnivadi Paskatyate Satarne. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Amadi Dvamanir Gunatvat Paramatmayam Avyam Shariyarastopikuntiya Na Karoti Na Nalipyate. That those who can actually see with the eyes of eternity, they can see that the soul is eternal and transcendental and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite contact with the material body, Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything nor is he entangled. In other words, no matter what we think, whatever illusion we might be under, the fact is we're actually transcendental. We're simply the observer, we're the experiencer of the material energy, but we never become part of the material energy. We simply experience it. Just like we experience dreams at night, but when we wake up, we don't identify ourselves with the dream anymore. Similarly, this present waking state is actually another phase of a dream, which we're imagining has something to do with our real self. It actually doesn't. Although there's a connection between what we're desiring and what's being arranged for us in the material world, but the arrangements in the material world have nothing to do with our real position, unless we're engaged in devotional service. Then the connection is that we're servants of Krishna, and when we desire to serve Krishna, that's reality. Everything else is just a different phase of illusion caused by the three modes of nature. Therefore, amadidvam, those who possess eternity, nirgunadvat, who possess beyond the material nature, that's how the soul is like that. Naiva kinchit, karomiti yuktamanite tatvavit, Pashan Srinvan Srishan Jigran Ashnanga Chansvapan Svasan Pralapan Vishijan Grinan Imushan Imushan Api Indriyan Diyarte Teshu Vartante Iti Dariyat Naiva Kinchit at any time. There's never a time that we were part of the material nature, and nor will in the future can we ever become part of the material nature. Naiva kinchit karo. Kara means to do, iti, thus. Naiva kinchit karo miti. That we're not actually doing anything in the material energy, except for desiring. But even that, the soul, just because he's desiring, doesn't mean he really has any real connection with the material energy except by his consciousness. Since our consciousness pervades the material nature to some, this material body to some extent, not fully, but to some extent, therefore that we're aware of what the different bodily conditions are to some extent. Naiva kinchit karomiti yukta manyata. But in order to understand that, one has to be yukta. One's mind has to be connected with the Supreme. If the mind is not connected with the Supreme, all we have is this identification with the body. We have to identify ourselves with something. So either we identify ourselves with Krishna as Krishna's servant, being in a material body, or we think ourselves be the material body. But when one is engaged in devotional service, yukta mani tatvavit, then he becomes tatvavit. Then he understands things properly. And what does he see? Naiva kinchit karomiti yukta manite tatvavit pashan. What does pashan mean? What does that mean? Yes, see. Pashan, srinvan, hearing. Sprishan, touch. Jigran. Like, jigra means the smell. Spashan, srinvan, sprishan, jigran, ashnan, taste. Ashnan, Naiva kinchit kromiti yuktamanite tatvavit pashan shrinvan sprishan jigran ashnan gachan. Gachan? To move about, yeah. Gachan. Sprishan. Actually, sprishan, gachan, shwasan, shwasan. Shwasan?
Shwasan means in our language something
else. Oh, okay. Welding. Shwasan. Sprishan. Naiva kinchit kromiti yuktamani te tatvavit spashan srivan sprishan jigran ashnanga chan swasan swapan. Swasan, which one comes first? Swapan or shwasan? Swapan comes first. Swapan, dreaming. Shwasan, breathing. So, one who's actually connected with the Supreme, naiva kinchit, at no time does he think himself to be doing these things. Naiva kinchit kromiti, because while engaged in, he knows, what's the first word of the translation? Person who's in knowledge of the absolute truth, they'll engage in seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and going about dreaming and breathing, always knows within himself that he does nothing at all. Because while engaged in, opening, closing his eyes, evacuating, receiving, always knows that only material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. That should be quite encouraging news. If we didn't have so many material plans, it would be quite encouraging. But because we have so many material plans, it makes no difference to us. As in the spiritual world, everyone knows that Krishna is God, but it doesn't make any difference to them. They still treat him like an ordinary cowherd boy. So here we know we're not the body, but it makes no difference to us. We act as if we are the body or the mind. We take it as, oh, that's not really important. Oh, what's for prasadam? That's really significant. But a person in the knowledge of the absolute truth, this is actually very significant. That we're eternal, that we're the conscious living entity within the body, and although the material body is engaged in so many different activities, but we're actually aloof from these activities. And therefore, everything rests in desiring properly. And what is desiring properly? As I said yesterday, we have to desire to fulfill the desires of the previous acharyas. Otherwise, what does it mean? Where does our desire come from? If it's not founded in the desires of our previous acharyas, which are founded on the desires to fulfill the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Rupa Goswami, we honor him, because he brought within this world the desire to fulfill the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Namo Mahabhadanaya Krishna Prema Pridayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namani Guratvishe Namaha. Who is that? Oma Gyanatimanandasya Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So we honor his lotus feet because he brought into this world the desire to fulfill the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But people don't know that. What is the value of being connected with the mission of Lord Chaitanya? That can actually bring us to the spiritual world. Instead, they're connected with so many other desires. Pumsa, Striya, Maituni, Bhavame, Tam, Traridya granti mahu atogriya shatra sutapti vitera janasya moha yam ahammameti. That if we're not connected with the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're going to have to be connected to some degree with the material mission, which means boy and girl get together and try to create a kingdom, try to get their palace, the Vaikuntha planet, And their expansions, their plenary, the intelligent children, and the partial, those who are not so intelligent. Their kingdom, some land, and their Garuda to take them around. So everyone is making their plans in the material world to expand their kingdom. Unfortunately, their kingdom is just like children making a kingdom on the sand of a beach. They make their palace, their castle, and all the inhabitants in the castle. But when the tide comes in, it all gets washed away. Similarly, everyone is making their little palaces in this world, big and small, but in the course of time, it'll all be taken away. And as their parents take them by the hand and bring them somewhere else, so the material nature will take us and bring us someplace else. Maharaja Shabdev, understanding that, he was not disturbed by whatever arrangements the material nature was making. As a matter of fact, although it may sound very unfavorable, but favorable situations in the material world may not be very favorable, ultimately, for spiritual life. For instance, if we get a very nice material situation, then we become attached to it. And at the time of death, we'll want to come back and get back into that same material situation. Prabhupada was walking in Geneva, past a very beautiful house on his morning walk, and every leaf on the tree was in its proper place. The lawn was perfectly mowed, the house was perfectly painted, everything was exactly in the order that it's supposed, that one would expect a perfect house to be in. And Srila Prabhupada's remark was that this person is very unfortunate, because he's so much absorbed in his house that surely in his next lifetime, he'll come back and have to live in the house again. And if he's not pious, he may not come back as a human being in the house. He may come back as another form of life, like a mouse in the house, or a cockroach in the house. So that's very unfortunate. If we strive in this lifetime to make a successful life in terms of the materialistic conception of what's success, then we're setting ourselves up for material attachment and having to come back and possibly to enter again into a similar situation. On the other hand, if one lives very simply, it's less likely that one is going to be overly attached. So at the time of death, that's what we'll think about. If a brahmachari lives on the floor, sleeps on the floor, it's very unlikely he's going to think of the floor at the time of death. I'm leaving the floor behind. I can't bear to feel separation. Maharaja Shabdev, he was faced with so many adverse conditions, but that simply makes one more detached from the material energy. If everyone was throwing flowers and praising him, they would be much more likely to become attached to that situation. If someone is throwing all kinds of abominable things at one and cursing one and disturbing one, one is not going to be very much attached to staying there. And therefore, one can easily fix his mind upon transcendence, upon another realm of experience other than the material experience. We find that those on the heavenly planets, they find it practically impossible to make any advancement in devotional service, because there are too much opportunities for enjoyment. Why would one want to transcend something if one is thinking one is happy and enjoying? We generally try to transcend things when we think we're suffering. We find wealthy people don't flock to the temple, at least not in Ljubljana. We don't find people pulling up here in their Rolls Royces and Bentleys to come to greet the deities. Because they think they're happy and enjoying. Why would they waste their time praying to God to take things away from them? Yasya anugrahanami harishe tad tanai shanai. especially in India, people know that if they become too much absorbed in devotional service, if they have wealth, Krishna might take the wealth away from them. So they're cautious. I came to the temple, I prayed to God, I came back, my house was burnt down. He fulfilled my prayers. But that's what Krishna's first mercy is, if one's too attached. With people who are too attached, who think they're happy, they're not going to be much interested in getting Krishna's mercy in the form of detachment. But those who don't have so much material possessions, then not only that they don't have to worry about material attachment, but they can actually think of something positive. They can actually focus their mind and activities in devotional service to Krishna. They don't have to worry about so many other things, like their bank balance, their family members, their prestige in society. They have room in their consciousness to actually think about Krishna. And it's much more likely in such a situation, one is able to find oneself absorbed enough in Krishna consciousness to get the higher taste of feeling, experiencing Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes, that everything else seems too trivial, insignificant. Therefore it says about the six Goswamis, Tyaktva Toranama Sheshamandala Pati Shrenim Sadatu Chavat Bhutva Dina Gunesha Ko Karunaya Kopina Kanta Shito Kopi Bhavar Samrita Dilahari Kolo Lamogna Moho Pande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopala Go Pande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopala Go Tyaktva Tornam Ashesha Mandala Pati. So Tyaktva, what does Tyaktva mean? What's that? Yeah, to give up. Tyaktva Tornam Ashesha Mandala Pati. Mandala Pati, the lords of this material world, the leaders of material world existence. They were all leaders, the six Goswamis. They're either wealthy personalities, Govardhan and Haranya Mujumdara, sons of Raghunath Das Goswami, was sons of millionaires, who was a son of millionaires. And Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, they were the ministers in the Nawab Hussain Shah's government, and therefore they were fabulously wealthy also. But they gave it all up as insignificant. Tuchava. And what do? They went to Vrindavan, they put on loincloths and lived as mendicants begging from door to door. But they were so much enriched with the gopis' feelings of separation that they enjoyed transcendental pleasure at every moment. And Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, similarly, Lord Chaitanya was at Jagannath Puri in the role of Srimati Radharani, feeling separation from Krishna. If God himself, he comes and he's living in the Gambhira, a very small room, and simply feeling separation from Krishna in great ecstasy, great transcendental pleasure. So what is he trying to show us? He's trying to show us that if we want to become happy, we eventually have to come to that platform also. We may not be able to renounce everything all at once, but if we hear and chant about Krishna, absorb the mind in Krishna consciousness, gradually we'll be able to spontaneously remember Krishna and eventually absorb the mind in Krishna consciousness and feel transcendental pleasure. And that transcendental pleasure purifies the heart so that the material energy seems insignificant. The lust, the anger, the greed, the illusion, the envy, the madness, they're all purified by the ecstasy of remembering Krishna, by associating with Krishna. And therefore, like Rishabhdev, whatever we encounter in the material world, whether it's pleasurable or not pleasurable, will not disturb us. Napari shat priyam prapya, no duidet chapyapya priyam, stira buddhira samudo, brahmavid brahmanistitaha. Person who doesn't rejoice when he obtains something pleasurable, nor laments when he obtains something unpleasurable, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is said to be situated in transcendence. Vyas parshay visaktatma bindat yatmini yat sukham sub brahma yoga yuktatma sukhamakshayam ashnute. Such a person is not attracted to material sense pleasure or external objects, but is always in trance, enjoying pleasure from within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness because he concentrates on the Supreme. Yehi samsparsha bhoga dukha yoni evate adyantavanta kuntiyat nate shuramate buddha. An intelligent person doesn't take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the senses with their objects. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise person doesn't delight with them. Shakno dihaiva yaksho dum praksharira vimokshana kama krodo bhavan vegans yukta sasuki nara. Before giving up this present material body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is a yogi and he is well and he is happy within this world. Like Maharaj Shabde. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Why did Rishabhadev act like
this? To show an example, so that people could follow his example. He was the king of the whole world, the emperor of the whole world. If someone's the emperor of the whole world nowadays, is he going to give it up to, or, you know, travel around the world naked and have people curse him and throw? Of course, nowadays, if you do that, they'll immediately arrest you, put you in jail, in solitary confinement. But back then, being an avaduta was part of the society. But to show an example, how you can become so detached from the material world by becoming completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Besides that, that's part of the process of self-realization. If you're up to the end of life, you're going to sit in your kingdom and, you know, make sure everything is material is provided for you, that there's no challenges in your spiritual life, then it's very unlikely you're going to make any spiritual progress. But to put oneself into a position where there is no material shelter, there's only spiritual shelter, then one will make very rapid spiritual progress. Prabhupada, at the beginning of the movement, he put the devotees in those positions so they could rely upon Krishna. Whether it was in India when the devotees were traveling with him and some gentleman came on the train and said, we'd like to open a center here. I'd like you to give me some devotees. And then Prabhupada just give a couple of the devotees who were traveling with him, say, stay here, open a center. They had no money. They knew no one there. And they were just put out from the train into the city. They came to the city, and they had to start a center there. So that means they had to rely upon Krishna. They couldn't call up their mother and ask to send some money. Have no place to stay. You know, Krishna is provided. That way, we develop faith. We never put ourselves in a position where we have to depend upon Krishna. Then how will Krishna reveal that he's dependable? But if we put ourselves in a position where we have to rely upon Krishna, then Krishna will reciprocate. When Durvasa Muni threw the fiery demon at Maharaj Ambarish, he didn't call 911 asking for some help. No, he started to meditate on Krishna, and Krishna protected him. Or Draupadi, when she was trying to be disrobed, when she tried to protect herself, it didn't work. But when she fully relied upon Krishna, then Krishna came and protected her. So we put ourselves in a position to rely upon Krishna, we're much more likely to rely upon him. And that may not be materially so comfortable. But the tendency is we want to arrange a nice, comfortable situation. Then we're going to rely upon Krishna. So generally we wind up just relying upon Krishna to make nice, comfortable arrangements for us. And when someone's not doing that, we wonder, why aren't you trying to make a nice, comfortable arrangement for yourself? And we don't become concerned with that if we actually try to absorb our consciousness in Krishna consciousness by hearing and chanting, making arrangements for hearing and chanting, and for distributing Krishna consciousness to others. By such arrangements, it's possible to become aloof from making arrangements for our own material comfort. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you, Maharaj. I'm very much inspired by this. The six Goswamis are leaders, but they are a few insignificant, like servants of Krishna. They didn't feel like they have some position. They feel loved, but in the proper way. They are really happy because of this.
Yeah, that's right. So we should become like the six Goswamis. Yes?
There are some verses, I think, in Bhagavatam where Krishna says that he is controller of our mind. And can Krishna protect you against your own mind if you have a really stubborn mind? I mean, what does that mean?
Means we're not relying upon Krishna. We think about Krishna, that's how we control the mind. In other words, if the mind is on Krishna, then it'll be controlled. Krishna is automatically going to control the mind. And if it's not on Krishna, then we'll be subjected to the influence of the senses and the materialistic desires. Somehow or another, we're going to seek pleasure and happiness, either through these gross senses or subtle senses or through Krishna. It's just a question of where we're looking for happiness, that's all. If we think happiness is associated with Krishna through hearing, chanting, and remembering Him and serving Him, then we'll utilize our mind, intelligence, and senses for that goal. And if we think happiness is in gratifying the demands of the senses and mind, then that's what we'll absorb ourselves in. Alright, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.